Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events related to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Thank you for inviting us into your homes tonight. This is Polygamy, What Love Is This? And that is a train going by at this moment. This is a live talk show. And we do appreciate your telephone calls. You can call in and talk about our topic and discuss it, ask questions or make comments. Our phone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820, or you can send your comments to us by email. And our email address is tv@aboutpolygamy.com. Our show is broadcast or rebroadcast on Sunday afternoons in the Boise, Idaho area from 4 until 5 p.m. on KCLP Channel 18 in Boise, Idaho. And live streaming video allows our viewers from around the globe to watch our show from our website, whatloveisthis.tv, the same time every Thursday night. Our website that describes our ministry to polygamists is shieldandrefuge.org. And if you're in a polygamy group and you have questions or you're thinking of leaving or you just want to talk, we would love to talk to you. Our toll-free hotline is 877-425-9993. The passion that we have is to help polygamists find the truth and know that they found the truth. And we also host a support group, a discussion group once a month. It's called Life After Polygamy. And if you are questioning, or if you've got family in polygamy, or if you've got polygamy in the background of your family, or if polygamy is in your future, you're welcome to come. Grab a friend and bring them on down. We meet once a month. Our next meeting is June 27th at 6:30 p.m. And you can email us tv@aboutpolygamy.com for more details. And people from every polygamy group, or even if you're not in a polygamy group, you're welcome to come. Just come and listen and participate. It's a low-key and a supportive, very supportive atmosphere. And also, the Salt Lake City ex-Mormon support group meetup meets day after tomorrow on Saturday. And you can go to www.meetup.com, or you can call 801-708-4865 for more information so you can get the time and the place of the meetup. And we do suggest that all those who are either in the Mormon church and you're questioning, or if you're transitioning, if you're in a polygamy group and you're questioning or transitioning or trying to leave, that you do participate in a support group. It's very helpful. It answers questions. And you've got people who've been there and done that and can be supportive without being judgmental. So I highly suggest that you do find a support group for whatever it is that you are trying to do. And we also would like to mention that KTMW TV20 provides a lot of free Christian programming on a weekly basis, and this free airtime can be expensive to TV20. So if you enjoy and if you appreciate the Christian broadcast, and if God is nudging you to participate in this ministry, you can send a donation directly to them. And the address is KTMW TV20, 314 South Redwood Road, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84104. And as you can imagine, broadcasting true Christianity in this culture presents some huge challenges. And your prayers and your words of encouragement and appreciation would also be a blessing to the management. We have been able to access video depositions from the recent polygamy reference case that took place in Canada. And those affidavits are public information and are from people who escaped from polygamy, and they're telling their stories. If you're interested in watching any or all of these video testimonies, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org, and all you have to do is just scroll down maybe a half an inch or an inch, and you'll find the link that you can click onto, and you can watch any of those videos. Testimonies. I think there's 13 videos and there are 12 different people with their testimonies there. So you might find that very interesting. And I'd also like to mention that our weekly disclaimer that reminds our viewers that our discussions regarding Mormon polygamy necessarily includes Mormonism, simply because it was Joseph Smith who introduced polygamy into Mormonism. And tonight we're going to be discussing this very topic in greater depth, so we think that you're going to find it an interesting conversation. On March 24th, our guest was Charles Larson. He's the author of the book, By His Own Hand Upon Papyrus, which was challenging Joseph Smith's so-called translation of the Book of Abraham. If you missed that show, you can go to our website, whatloveisthis.tv, click on previous shows for 2011, and go to March 24th, and you can rewatch that program. Tonight, Charles Larson is back, and we're going to talk about another book that he's written. This time, however, it's a fictional crime thriller, and it's set in the Mormon culture, which includes some polygamy in the storyline. In this novel, he handles fundamentalism with great care and sensitivity, which of course demonstrates that he has a clear understanding of the subject. The title of his book is A Destroying Angel. I think we'll have a graphic coming up on the screen for that. And he will be able to give you a little more information and also how to obtain a copy. So I'd like to introduce and welcome back to our show tonight, Charles Larson. Thanks for coming.
Doris, thank you. It's good to be back here again.
Well, we had a good time last time. Let's see if we can do it again.
We had a wonderful time. Had some fantastic calls.
Mm-hmm, we did. And good conversation. Well, let's just take about a minute or so and talk about your book and let our viewers know a little bit about it, why you wrote it, and why the particular storyline that you chose, and how can they obtain a copy?
Well, the book is called Destroying Angel, and it is a crime thriller set in contemporary Utah, but it has historic overtones back to the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Mm-hmm. This is a secular book. Mm-hmm. It is not a Christian-written proselytizing book to try to go and convince all Mormons that this book was written for mainstream readers all over the country, all over the world, really, who may have very little exposure to Mormon culture. Mm-hmm. They see Mitt Romney or John Huntsman on the news or whatever, and they say, oh, that fellow's a Mormon, and then they read about things going on down at the YFZ ranch in Texas. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, those aren't supposed to be Mormons, but they sound like Mormons. And they don't really know anything about Mormon culture. Yeah. I wanted to go and really be the first writer to try to depict Mormon culture from the inside as most people that are familiar with it see it and live it. Mm-hmm. That includes active members, that includes not so active members, that includes fundamentalists, that includes some of the critics, that includes some of the apologetics. It does not attempt to criticize LDS culture at all.
No, there's no criticism.
And it doesn't try to be apologetic toward LDS mm-hmm. culture either.
No, it's just the story.
It is just the story. And, you know, when you think about it, almost every other culture has been able to appear like this in literature, whether you're talking about the Catholics or the Quakers or the Navajo or Native Americans, whatever. There's a wealth of literature mm-hmm. about all kinds of cultures, virtually nothing about Mormon culture unless it's been written by someone trying to either slam it or shove it down your throat. Uh-huh. And so I wanted to not do either.
Yeah. And you did a very good job, I might say.
Thank you.
Where can our viewers get a copy?
Well, I know it's carried by Borders, or it can be ordered through Borders if they don't have it in stock. You could actually order it through almost any major bookstore. I know that here locally in the Salt Lake area that Benchmark Books carries it, Ken Sanders mm-hmm. carries it. And of course, people can order it on Amazon if they want. We're hoping to have it distributed nationwide as reviews come in and it begins to pick up a little mm-hmm. more momentum. Mm-hmm. But it's capable of doing that. It's mm-hmm. had some excellent reviews. It's been compared to Dan Brown's thrillers. In fact, mm-hmm. one person called this the Da Vinci Code of Mormonism, which I was very flattered by.
Okay, yes, that is, and I would agree. It's a very good book. Charles Larson has graciously offered a free book tonight to a viewer who can answer this question, or at least answer to this question. How can Mormons be Christian when they don't believe and follow Christian doctrine, and why don't they accept polygamous as Mormon when polygamists do believe and follow Mormon doctrine? And there's only one free book available, and the first person who will call in and answer to that statement, we will give that book to you. And of course, you need to leave your mailing address to the operator when you do that. Well, before we get started on our discussion, why don't you tell us a bit about your personal exposure to polygamists and their culture?
Okay. I first became acquainted with fundamentalists when I was a Latter-day Saint. Okay, and I had just been married for a couple of years. My wife and I met some fundamentalists who impressed us as being extremely devout and sensitive. They weren't pretentious at all. They really lived their religion. They were not wealthy people. They made do with what they had, and they shared it. This was not an abusive group. It was not an abusive family. And we just found their sincerity very, very genuine and deep and refreshing. Mm-hmm. And we admired them as people. Mm-hmm. But we had each just come to the realization that Mormonism was not what it claims to be. And so no matter how impressive they were, we didn't want to go jump into bed with them, mm-hmm. so to speak, because we didn't believe the Mormonism was true. So why would we follow even deeper into Joseph Smith's teaching?
Exactly.
Right. But we developed a burden for those people,
yeah.
And a caring burden too, to want to know more about them and to understand where they're coming from. So that was my initial exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, later on, many years later, I began working with different groups that would have exposure to them, like the Attorney General's Safety Net Committee.
Mm-hmm.
I was a member of that for quite some time and would travel throughout the state, and I would represent various state agencies and try to facilitate some type of a liaison where they could fill out paperwork if they needed assistance, like food stamps or something. How do you describe a polygamous household?
Yeah.
You know, where is the father? Well, you know, he's in the home, but he's not of the home. Whatever.
So I
had quite a lot of exposure to them there and met some remarkable people that I still admire and love them dearly to this day.
Yeah. Tell me how you perceive generally that the traditional LDS community, the LDS people, view the fundamentalists.
Well, they see them as sinners who are in darkness, outside of the light. They do not see them as Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
A term that general authorities used to use was cultists.
Yeah.
I don't know if they still use that term or not.
I don't
because
think they do.
Maybe
generally,
not.
I don't.
But
think
that was a very popular term, 20, 30 years ago for them to use when describing fundamentalists. And the reason for that is that it used to be that when you had a temple recommend interview, one of the questions that you were asked was whether you had any association with apostate groups or so forth, meaning, of course, fundamentalists.
Right.
There was a great fear of that.
And
I think
they still do ask that.
Well, they do. The fear, I think, stems from the idea that fundamentalists don't recognize present Mormon authority.
No, they don't.
And if you start flirting with the idea of fundamentalism, all of a sudden you're not supporting the brethren, and that means that your tithing is going to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. None of the polygamy groups or the Mormon Church recognize each other's authority. Each one claims they have their own.
Right.
And what I find interesting, especially doing this particular show, is we do get a lot of email response, and our most hateful responses are from Mormons, mainstream Mormons. You'd think it might be polygamists, although I've had negative from them too, but the most hateful is from the mainstream Mormon, and they will call the fundamentalist sickos and apostates
yes,
and lawbreakers and pedophiles and disgusting, and they don't realize that if this is true about contemporary polygamists, it was true about early Mormon polygamists.
Exactly. When you remember the Tom Green trial in Provo some years ago, around 2001, 2002, I believe it was. It was right before the Olympics. Okay, they had to quiet him down because he was making all kinds of news and getting bad publicity for Utah right before our big party. Well, I attended every session of that trial as it was held in Provo. I was the only historian to do so. And I took some interesting notes, and I projected some of that into my book as well. The polygamists and the fundamentalists see that trial much differently than the rest of us do.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, I remember being struck coming out of the courtroom one particular day by the comments that people were making. These were people from the community, people from Provo, from Santaquin, from Orem, from Salt Lake, from all over the place coming out. And, oh, the snide little catty remarks, well, hide your daughter, you know, oh, your daughter's too old for him. She's past puberty, you know, that type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
All of these type of comments that they were directing toward Tom Green.
Yeah.
And I just had this, it was like Yogi Berra with deja vu all over again.
Oh.
Okay, I just said to myself, can you imagine these same people's grandparents having the same thing said about them by the rest of the country when they were practicing polygamy?
And the same thing said to Joseph Smith.
The same thing said to Joseph
just
Smith.
As they came out of puberty.
Oh, yeah,
and so
of course.
On. Exactly.
So it's funny how they want to divorce themselves from the very idea when it's so fundamentally a core of themselves.
It's like, and they can't connect the dots.
And so they could become the very people that they even now teach were persecuting their own ancestors.
That's true.
Wow.
That's true.
Isn't that something?
And I'd like to mention right here, when I said that we get emails calling the fundamentalists those kinds of names, that isn't our opinion. I'm just stating what we have received from emails, because we do not call names. We don't believe in name calling, and that is not the purpose of our show at all. But I wonder, you know, sometimes when you see things and hear things like that, if it helps them but maybe better understand the persecution the early Mormons did have. Because the early Mormons were, a lot of their persecution was brought upon themselves. People didn't want their daughters stolen or taken away and married off to an older man.
No, they didn't.
As a plural wife.
But I'll tell you, Doris, my opinion is that it is the fundamentalists who have a greater sense of context for what that
persecution felt like.
Contemporary Mormons, the only thing they know about persecution is what they read about.
And what
they
reenact every 24th.
And what they reenact, of course. And they get that so wrong.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
When's the last time you were down to the Manti Miracle Passion? Oh, my gosh. But
yeah.
No, but the fundamentalists, they are persecuted not only by the world and treated the same way that the early Mormons were, but they are persecuted by their own
people,
brethren. And, yeah, they see the people in the mainstream Mormon church as their brethren. They refer to it as the mother church. And they are being persecuted by their brethren for their brethren's sake, because they're holding those keys until the Mother Church repents.
let's talk about the link between the fundamentalist Mormons and Mormonism itself.
Sure. I imagine you've probably explored that a lot on this show, in various programs and so forth. Basically, fundamentalism happened by accident. It happened by accident. Along about the time of the manifesto and leading up to it, the church was experiencing a great deal of pressure from the government. Different laws against polygamy had been enacted and so forth, and it was one of the twin relics of barbarism, and slavery had already been overcome.
Yeah.
And of course, all of the blacks were happy because slavery was ended and there was no more persecution or discrimination, but the polygamy was still standing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it became the focus of all of the crusaders and all of the novelists and all of the writers, and everything was directed against the Mormons. But it really began to hit home when their property began to be threatened by it because of not complying with the laws of the United States. They were about to lose title to all of the property that the church held. And at that time, not only were the holdings in Utah considerable, but they had a great deal of land and so forth that they'd obtained through railroad investments as well. So this was a huge threat. It would have undercut the entire financial stability of the church and their ability to do business as they were accustomed to. And yet, polygamy, plural marriage, the celestial principle, you know, the true order of marriage, whatever you want to call it, was a pillar of their fundamental doctrine.
It was.
Okay, what could they do? And they wrestled with this. Presidents like John Taylor wrestled with this, and he became very adamant, saying that it would never be taken from the earth, that there would always be a generation practicing it until Christ came.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Wilford Woodruff was one of these people that believed in end times so much. In fact, his biography is called Waiting for World's End. I don't know if you've read it.
No, I haven't.
He lived and breathed the idea that Christ was coming back in his lifetime, as all Mormons in that
they
day
did.
They believed that.
I think 1891 was the year.
1891. There were two separate prophecies that Joseph Smith, pronouncements that he made that were taken as prophecy. One of them, of course, when he was writing and saying that if he lived to be an old man, even 86 years of age, that he would see the coming of God in the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the one most people are familiar with. The one that most people aren't familiar with, they could easily go and look up in B.H. Roberts' History of the Church. Go back to February 14, 1835, when the first 12 apostles were called in Kirtland. And read through that, and read the blessing that was given to them as they go forth to prune the vineyard for the very last time.
That's right.
Even 56 years should wind up the scene. Okay.
That's true.
So, as they approached this October conference in 1890, no one in their right mind, with any grain of faith in Joseph Smith, believed that Christ would come any later than February 14th, 1891.
Mm-hmm.
So they could tell the federal government whatever the federal government wanted to hear, keep on doing what they were doing, keep their marriages intact, and then pretty soon they would be the government of the world.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Well, so they issued the manifesto, not expecting to ever have to enforce it, ever have to take any action against anyone. Meaningless. Every general authority with plural wives kept their plural wives. Every other person with plural wives kept their plural wives.
Mm-hmm.
And then next February comes and Christ didn't come.
Yeah.
So maybe they're off a year. They wait till 1892, 93. Pretty soon statehood comes in, and well, that's looking pretty good. You know, we're rolling along here. We're getting all of the benefits of statehood. And gradually, the church and the leaders of the church got used to the idea that accommodating to normal American life was a lot better than being thought of as weird. By the time of the Reed-Smoot hearings in 1904, you were actually having people being separated and cut off. John Taylor's son, mm-hmm. for example,
mm-hmm.
for continuing to practice or preach polygamy. And suddenly all of the people who were still practicing it in Mexico and what have you, thought that they were being called to do something, all of a sudden find themselves out of sorts with the mainstream church and threatened for being cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you have people like B. Harvey Allred writing his Leaf and Review and so forth, and these different keys being passed on and so forth from this general authority and that general authority, and John Taylor's revelation of 1886 being presented and codified by the fundamentalists, but not by the mainstream church.
Exactly.
So eventually by the 1920s, you had a totally clean break. The church was trying to accommodate to the world. It liked accommodation. The Mormon Tabernacle Choir was popular on the radio, and people were starting to not think of Mormons as people having horns.
Mm-hmm.
So the fundamentalists were pushed aside, where they were persecuted vigorously for a few years and then ignored completely as though they didn't exist at all.
Yeah, and they went underground and they scattered, and
that's
and
right.
Each one. On page 97 of your book, one of the characters that you developed, you named him Orin, and he was talking with or listening to a conversation with a polygamist woman.
Yeah.
And that woman made the remark that the polygamist had suffered and endured persecution for their beliefs ever since Joseph Smith. And this character was shocked because the polygamists had just laid claim to the same history that the mainline Mormon church belonged to. And it shocked him. I've actually seen that happen
with people.
And I have too. Do you think the man on the street, regular Mormon, even realizes that the polygamy share their history 100%?
100% is right. Actually, even more than that. But I think that the reaction of my character in my book was very typical of what the majority of Mormons would feel. Mormons feel that their history is theirs exclusively. Mm-hmm. Since they don't see fundamentalists or polygamists as being part of them, mm-hmm. they don't see them as having that history. But fundamentalists do.
They do.
Own Mormon history every bit as much.
You bet they do. They certainly do. Well, let's talk about how fundamentalists are actually more Mormon than the Mormons are.
All right. Well,
now, they're living true Mormonism, but the Mormons don't want them to be considered Mormon in any sense of the term.
No. Fundamentalists refer to the Mother Church's condition as the Great Accommodation. Okay. An accommodation with Babylon, accommodation with the world. Okay.
They think they're the apostates.
They look upon the mainstream LDS church as the apostates,
right.
Just as the mainstream LDS church looks upon them as apostates. Their biggest sin in the eyes of the mainstream is that they won't recognize the present authority of the church. They consider it to be, of course, apostate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But back to what you were saying, though, let's see.
The more Mormons they're living true Mormonism.
True Mormonism. Fundamentalists do not brush aside things that earlier leaders had said. People like Brigham Young.
Right.
People like Joseph Smith. They don't try to equivocate them away. When the mainstream LDS church began to drift away from some of those things because they weren't popular and they didn't help the accommodation, many ideas changed within the LDS church. Okay, and mm-hmm. the people living them at the time accepted them because they accepted the authority that said that they could change or that they could be that way. And then a generation later, well, it had always been that way. Two generations later, then they didn't even know anything about the way it had been before. Fundamentalists don't do that.
Mm-mm.
If Brigham Young taught Adam God doctrine, then by golly, that's a valid doctrine. And they don't have to go ahead and pretend that it didn't happen. They will go ahead and teach Adam God doctrine.
They're more honest in their belief.
If Joseph Smith introduced polygamy and John Taylor said that it would be an everlasting covenant that would endure, mm-hmm. then by golly, that's what they meant. So they're more Mormon, really, than contemporary Mormons. Contemporary Mormons are this kind of, and I don't want to sound I don't want to sound unpleasant. I don't want to sound unpleasant, but they are a peculiar people who try to live with one foot in two worlds. They want the exclusiveness of being descendants of Joseph Smith's restoration, and yet they want the acceptance of the world by, see, we're Christians too, just mm-hmm. like we want you to think we are.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking about this as, preparing and everything and thinking, and it came to my mind that perhaps this, not perhaps, I know for a fact, that progressive revelation is very dangerous. What it has done is just confused, made everything confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you get to the Bible, there's one revelation, and it all agrees, and we're not mm-hmm. confused because we know what it says, and there's no prevarication or nothing to add on to it that contradicts. But when you get this progressive revelation, Brigham Young says something, and then the next prophet comes in and contradicts him, but Brigham Young was supposed to have been a prophet, and then as each prophet and seer and revelator comes along, they each can override the previous prophet said, and they often contradict each other,
something horrible, and
you get confused. Well, you tell a Mormon, well, so-and-so said this. This is what Mormons believe because Wilford Woodruff said it. And they say, no, we don't believe that.
You're spouting anti-Mormon literature, and that's not what we believe. And then if you actually show it to them, then, of course, it requires the art of an apologist to go and explain why someone said that back then
and why
it wasn't really taken. For instance, Brigham Young, when he talked about the Adam God doctrine, he was on the golf course talking to his caddy and speculating. He was not standing in the tabernacle preaching during General Conference.
Which we know isn't true either. But anyway, we will open our phone lines now. We will continue our discussion, but we want to hear from our viewers. So our telephone number is 801-973-TV20. If you want to call in and ask our guest a question, please stay on topic. We would appreciate that. And remember the book, one book we're going to give away for those who will address the question, okay. If Mormons want to be called Christian but they don't believe in Christian doctrine, why don't they allow fundamentalists to be called Mormon when they do believe in Mormon doctrine? Why is it, do you think, that is so difficult, and maybe we've already discussed this somewhat, why is it so difficult for the mainstream LDS to understand that fundamentalist beliefs are the same, are basically foundational to what Mormonism really is?
Well, because Mormons, again, have this belief in the chain of authority, in the progressing revelation, as you were mentioning. Okay, and to them, the only way, place that Mormonism could have ended up is where it is, where they are. So anything that deviates from that must be outside and must therefore be wrong. And who knows and who cares where it became wrong? It's just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much consistency within the Mormon Church in so many things. It's the same priesthood manual, the same Sunday school manual.
Yeah.
You could go to a Mormon ward in Sandy, Utah, or a Mormon ward in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and you would have exactly the same priesthood lesson taught on exactly the same Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Mormons mm-hmm. who travel a great deal know this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
you could go to the Mormon temple in Bountiful, or the Mormon temple in Los Angeles, or the Mormon temple in Hawaii, or the Mormon temple in Switzerland. You'll have the same endowment ceremony where you're doing the same work on behalf of the dead, whether you can pronounce the name or not,
mm-hmm.
and it's all consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything got outside of that consistency, it's not something authorized by the brethren who you know you can trust.
No, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, you can trust us because we tell you you can trust us, okay? So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that is why they see them as outside. And there is that lack. I think that there's something even more repulsive, if I could use that term, that a Mormon sees in a fundamentalist, because they should know the truth. They've been exposed to some of the fundamentals, and if they believe in Joseph Smith and if they believe in the Book of Mormon, that should lead them to where the conventional Mormon is now.
I read a blog of a returned Mormon missionary who mm-hmm. was shot, he said, when he was on his mission, and he had gone to proselytize some fundamentalists.
Mm.
And he had no clue that when he opened the Book of Mormon, the Doctrine and Covenants, the Pearl of Great Price, some of their other books, mm-hmm. that they studied and knew them better than he
Quite
did.
A lot better.
And he said, I had no idea. And
I bet he didn't do that again.
Sad. That's sad. They don't even know their own history.
No.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it looks like we've got some calls here, so
all right.
Let's go to the phones. We have Thelma calling from Layton. Hello, Thelma.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay.
What's your question or comment?
Yes.
What is your question or comment?
A few weeks ago, you talked about the FLDS.
The polygamists?
RLDS. Do you mention the R? Reformed LDS?
No, we didn't talk about the RLDS.
Yes, the Reformed LDS.
We did not talk about them. What's your question?
Well, what do they believe? What is their religion? Is it Emma's?
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes. That's the reorganized LDS church that she put her son in charge of. And it was around 1859, I believe, that it organized. And it grew up basically back in Illinois and around the Midwest area,
right.
Composed of people that didn't follow Brigham Young.
And then are they called Christians?
Well, that's a good question. I think that for anyone to be called a Christian depends upon their personal relationship with Christ. As far as the church itself goes, the RLDS church is not considered a Christian church by any other Christian mm-hmm. body.
No, it's not.
Well, they have a preacher.
Well, yes. Many people have preachers, but that doesn't mean that they preach Christian doctrine or that they're a Christian church.
Well, I just wondered because I traveled back there years ago, and
yes.
That's all you've seen was RLDS.
Yes.
all the way back.
Yeah.
Yes, they used to be actually a lot larger than they are now, but they are still holding on. They believed in the leadership of their church being in direct descent from Joseph Smith.
Right.
That's why it was started with his son, and then it passed on to his son, and so on and so forth. A few years ago, though, they ran out of direct descendants, and there's no longer a direct descendant of Joseph Smith in charge. They still accept the Book of Mormon. They still accept some of other Joseph Smith's other writings. They never accepted polygamy.
Right. I don't think they accepted the Doctrine and Covenants, did they?
They did accept a portion of the Doctrine and Covenants, yes. Yes, they do have that.
But not 132.
Not 132, no. That was done by the Utah Church.
Yeah. Okay, does that help you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just thought they were of the Bible.
No, more than that, I'm afraid.
Okay, thank you, Thelma.
And thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good night. Okay, in line one, we have Paul from Salt Lake City calling.
Okay.
Hello, Paul.
Hi.
Yes, you're
I
on the air.
I just wanted to comment about your guest about contemporary Mormons. I totally agree. We feel like we want to have one foot in the tub and one foot out. One foot saying that we're Christian and one foot clinging to our Mormon roots. When we can't just accept that we're just Mormon and go from there. As Christians, wouldn't you respect us more rather than us trying to claim that we're Christians or something that we're not?
That's right, Paul.
And
that's
just say
exactly
that we're Mormons.
Right.
I really appreciate that comment and your candor.
Yes.
And the answer is yes, I respect that a great deal more from Mormons, because I feel that they're being sincere with me when they stand for what they believe in and are honest enough to tell me what that is. I don't want someone trying to go and make me think something when they think they know better. And I think that your dog in the background there agrees with you, too.
Yeah, I guess so. But
and what's interesting, too, I think, is that in the early Mormon church, they kept themselves from Christianity. They didn't want to be connected or confused with Christianity
anyway. It's part of the whole idea of accommodation. Mm-hmm. And frankly, more doors open when you're sending out missionaries, when little is known about you other than, that you have the name Jesus Christ in the name of your church, and it's in bigger letters than all of the other letters.
Also, for all that's been said about the persecution from the early days, from the evangelicals towards Joseph Smith and that, it still puzzles me. If it was that bad, why are we so... do we want to be Christian so bad? Why can't we just accept being Mormon? It's ridiculous.
Well, ask your bishop.
I find our legislature is Republican only because they want to be accepted by evangelical Southern people in the Republican Party. It really drives me nuts, but thanks for taking my call.
You make some good points. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for your call. We appreciate them. Thanks for your honesty. Okay, line two, we have Matt calling from Magna. Hello, Matt.
Hi.
Hello, you need to turn your volume of the TV down.
Yes.
Okay.
It is going down right now. It's a new TV. I'm trying to learn how to work it. How are you doing tonight?
We're great. How are you?
You know, I'm hanging in there.
Okay. What is your question or your comment about our topic?
You know, my main question is, I don't watch this channel, but I was watching NCIS. And you said something interesting, which is something that has troubled me right about since the age of 17. Are you still there?
Yes.
Sure.
We're listening.
Okay. I was, long story short, at the age of 3, I was put into foster care. And care is not a word that I would use in that.
Okay.
But I was adopted twice. I found my family 20 years later. I was raised Mormon. Now... Just to give you a brief overview of who I am and why my thoughts might be a little diluted. Now, the question of polygamy came up. You follow me?
Yes.
I'm just hoping I make sense.
Yeah, make it as quickly as you can, please.
Okay, yes. Polygamy is accepted pretty much worldwide. Why is it that Mormons are picked on? When I went to Marine Corps, they found out what religion I was, and my drill instructor, at 17 years old I was, he said, "How many wives do you have?" Uh-huh. I said, "None, sir." He asked me, "Am I gay?" I said, "No, sir, I'm 17. So I'm wondering, what is the world's overview of polygamy, and why are the Mormons picked on it?
Well,
and that is the end of my question.
Okay, thank you.
That's it. Actually, that is a question I was going to ask you a little bit, so go for it.
All right.
Can I stay on the line, or are you done with me?
It's up to you.
I'm sorry?
You can hang up and listen to the answer if you'd like.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good one to bring up there.
Yeah.
Okay, how is Mormon polygamy different from, well, a fifth of the world practicing polygamy or acknowledging it or accepting it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Of course, most of that fifth of the world is Muslim.
Right.
But through all cultures, throughout history, there has been some evidence of polygamy. You can go back thousands of years and mm-hmm. find polygamy. Mormonism is the only culture that treats the practice of polygamy as a requirement of God in order to go and earn some type of points or position in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, every other culture either permits polygamy, as Islam does, or it tolerates polygamy, as New Testament Christianity did, because it was practiced around them. But it is not anything that was ever taught as having been commanded by God is what
right.
you need to do in order to go and reach a certain level of perfection in the afterlife or a certain honor here.
Right.
Every other culture, it's always been something secular.
A choice
that people can make.
Mm-hmm.
Only Mormonism has made it something that is religiously motivated in order to please God. And that brings up another thing, okay, that I... You know, you asked me before if I felt that polygamists are victims.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say yes, polygamists are victims. Even the happy ones, the ones with the nice family. And I have been in some LDS homes where I've watched 20 barefoot kids play on the grass and the trampolines. And it seemed like heaven to me. I love children.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I do see polygamists as victims because they have taken as a religious obligation or tenet something that is not actually of God.
Right, exactly.
And so that means that they are thinking that they are pleasing God by doing something that is only something that is cultural.
Actually contradictory to what
And
God
even
would
contradictory
have
to what God would say.
And coming from someone who was born and raised in polygamy group and was raised under their teachings.
Mm-hmm.
The girls were constantly told that if we didn't submit to that, we would be destroyed, which is exactly what Joseph Smith told Emma.
Oh, yeah.
And that threat is horrible.
DNC 132 is a great piece of paper to have in your pocket if you're some philandering guy that got caught with your pants down. Okay, that is exactly
that's
DNC 132 is.
That's exactly what it
okay,
is.
Okay, and I cannot imagine that the highest spiritual calling for a woman is to learn how to share a man.
When God says it's one for one,
yeah.
only one for one.
Exactly.
So that's a
But
a that, good
that's
answer.
The difference. I hope we answered this question.
I hope so too. Okay. So I hope our viewer is happy. Okay, off the air question. How do Mormons claim to be Christian if they believe that Jesus was physically conceived? Well, they claim to be Christian because they want to claim to be Christian. They don't care
yeah.
about the doctrine matching Christian doctrine.
Right.
It doesn't have any bearing.
Right. I mean,
on it.
whether you're a Baptist and you say that Christ was begotten by the Holy Ghost or the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of God coming upon Mary, foreshadowing her, and so forth, and she conceived that which was not of man. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mormons believe, or they used to teach a long time ago, I should say.
Yeah.
And if you poke around and knock on enough doors in a priesthood meeting, you will find some people who will still probably admit that Mormons used to teach that Jesus Christ was physically conceived by God the Father, who they call Elohim, coming and physically appearing to Mary and having a date.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, it would be a supernatural thing, so I suppose that I can't really say that that's the only criteria for saying that Mormons aren't Christian. But
no, there's a, there are a lot of things.
And I just said something that I don't normally say, where I said Mormon's not Christian, because a Christian is a person who has a personal saving relationship with Christ that they have acknowledged in their heart, regardless of what system that they are in, whether they understand what has happened or not. God understands it. It is the system of Mormonism that
it's
is not doctrine. Christian.
It's okay. The doctrine.
It is the doctrine.
Especially the doctrine of salvation.
Yes.
Especially.
Yes.
Okay, line one, we have May calling. Hello, May.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, Doris. This, he obviously knows me. I'm just calling. I had a comment about maybe why it's so hard for the LDS people to accept or not accept things that were preached at one time.
Okay.
I used to be LDS, quite faithful, and I'm no longer in the church. But I called it a get out of jail free card.
Okay.
Kind of like that article of faith that says, we believe all that was revealed, now revealed, and will yet be revealed.
Uh-huh.
And so when you kind of approach them with the ideas of, well, what about what Brigham Young said or what John Taylor said, it's easy to say, well, the prophet now says, so we don't believe
that.
Yes,
right.
And yet at the same time, they preach that the Lord is unchanging and that his commandments are the same. And so it's a real, it's a conflict that they don't look at.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And it's easy for them to try and get around that.
They don't do paradoxes well, do they?
No. I don't think they see them. I really don't think they're capable of seeing them.
Well, if you do see one and you're a Latter-day Saint, you're supposed to not give it any time, because that's the adversary knocking at your door, they will say, and the best way to go and defeat that is to get active in something else. You know, how would you like a scout troop assignment, or have you finished your genealogy yet, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they will
get your
a
mind
person who is actually
else.
Asking a question or troubled by a question is taught to go and busy themselves until that question loses its urgency.
Yes. That's very true. Well, I just want to say I appreciate your show and thank you for all that you do.
Well, thanks for calling. We do appreciate your call too and your question. Mm-hmm. Okay, good night. All right, we have Gordon calling from Salt Lake City. Hello, Gordon.
Hi, how you doing this evening?
Good.
We're doing well, thank you. What's your question?
Let me just take this off speakerphone if I can. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been listening to you for 10, 15 minutes. I haven't heard the whole program, but I'd just like to, I guess you folks are Christians or claiming to be some Christians, is that right?
We like to think so, yes.
Yes.
Okay, now, Christ, things have changed. You believe in the Bible as well, I understand. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you still practicing blood sacrifice? Those were things done by prophets in the past and in the Bible. Can we say you're not true Christians if you're not doing that? That's something that's changed. Christ, I suppose you believe in Christ. There were things changed when Christ came, things that the Christians believed in that were anticipating Christ. And when supernatural, as you call it, prophets receive inspirations from God. As he said, God will do nothing save he reveals to his servants the prophets. Those, as you call it, could be supernatural, things that come from heaven and not just from man. And those things do happen, and things are added upon. Now, when this gentleman that called a couple calls ago, I think he purported to be a Mormon and saying, why can't you just respect us as Mormons?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to be Christians. There is no such thing as a Mormon church. It's a great prophet, an ancient prophet, as you know. This is the Church of Jesus Christ. Now, when you say Mormons aren't Christians, and you judge them, and bigotedly perhaps, because they don't follow doctrines that you believe, maybe it's more accurate to say Church of Jesus Christ are not Nicenites, because the most traditional so-called Christian churches of today follow the doctrines that came out of that, can we say, government organization of Nicaea, where they voted and decided what to believe about Christ, and many things were significantly changed from what Christ taught, and many of Christ's followers at the time were troubled by by how they changed the
There's no manuscript evidence for that.
It seems like a strange way to say we're not Christian. We do have personal relationships with Christ. We do follow the Bible. We do pray personally. And we teach to pray personally, and that's the most important thing, to have a relationship with Christ.
Exactly.
It is the Church of Jesus Christ. And we do, we are born again, as the traditional Christians claim is all you have to do.
Okay, Gordon,
we do that.
Yes. Gordon,
we
are you...
We strive to live lives...
Gordon, are you going to allow us to respond? If not, then we will disconnect you and respond.
I'm listening.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Gordon. Okay, you've thrown a lot out here, and I can understand your feelings on that. Okay.
It's more than feelings.
Well, we all have feelings, okay? And
yes,
I'm describing my feelings too. And you can apply whatever term makes you feel better there, or if you'd have another that you'd prefer I use, I'm not going to debate that. But I appreciate the depth of your expression. How's that? Okay? Because I want
me to busy myself until subjects go away there. And I've been in the church my whole life. I've been very active.
Of course. Let me respond, Gordon, please.
Come up. The church teaches people to busy
themselves. I'll put you on hold.
Anything of the like has ever been taught to me, and I'm graduated
okay.
from Institute.
Thanks,
Gordon.
Okay.
Gordon, if you don't let our guest respond, I will disconnect you.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Gordon, you talked about why... Are we saying that Mormonism is not Christian? Okay, I acknowledge that a person who calls himself a Latter-day Saint can be what I would consider to be a Christian if the reason that they call themselves a Christian is because of what Christ has done for them. Okay? Now, the trouble is that there are many people in many denominations, not just the Mormon denomination, but many denominations who base their label of Christianity with a small c on an organization, not upon Christ's work, not upon Christ's atonement. And if they go and try to, the Bible, for example, says that if you try to add to what Christ has done, then Christ's grace is of no effect
upon you because that is
not Christ's grace. It's either all Christ's work or not Christ's work. So if I'm going to go and sit here and try to interpret whether I consider a system to be Christian or not, I'm going to first of all base it upon the Bible. I'm going to base it upon the teachings of Paul, upon the teachings of the other apostles, and mainly upon the words of Christ himself.
And it has to be exclusively the Bible. It can't be the Bible
I believe
plus
that it has to be
else.
Exclusively the Bible. That when you start
There's
bringing
no scriptures or was never taught by Christ or anywhere in the Bible that is so.
That is
the quote you just made about not adding anything to it, that actually was made early on in the Bible. That there were many things written after that.
It's written clear to the end.
Well, we aren't going to get into a large debate on that tonight because obviously we can't cover it.
I understand they're based on the traditions that have been around for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years.
And it sounds like yours are based upon the traditions that have been around for 100 years.
Follow Christ.
Let's disconnect.
We see him as the chief cornerstone.
Gordon, we're going.
Yeah, we'll go now.
We're going to disconnect you. You're not allowing a good conversation. But thanks for your call. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have an off-the-air question or statement. Ephesians 4:14 describes the Mormons. It describes a lot of people. It describes a lot of people who don't know how to cling to the truths of what the Bible says. That's the verse that says that they are tossed to and fro with strange doctrines. And many
people are tossed to and fro. And the deal with
Mormons being Christian is that we don't define Christianity. Neither do the Mormons define Christianity. This defines Christianity. Mm-hmm. And if what they believe is not consistent with this, they can't be Christian.
You know, I was once asked by a fellow if I believed that Mormons were Christian the same way that I viewed myself as being a Christian. Now, maybe this is the crux of what our caller was trying to ask.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very simple answer for him. I said that the Christians that I know and fellowship with would consider Mormonism to be Christian to about the same degree that Mormons believe that God considers all other Christian denominations to be acceptable before God.
Hmm.
Okay?
Interesting.
Now, if you want to go ahead and look up in Joseph Smith's story where he's talking about God appearing to him and saying that all of their creeds are an abomination and their professors are corrupt and not one of them is true, well, that is what Mormonism still believes about all other Christian churches.
They do. They still claim to be the only true
church. And yet they want those same Christian churches to look upon the Mormon church as, well, you're just one of us, and we'll go ahead and let you come in and eat with us and be with us and fellowship with us. And by the way, what is that strange new book you have?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
That's not how it works, guys. Be one or the other.
Well, we've got another minute if you can very quickly answer this in 45 seconds. Why don't Mormons know that Joseph Smith was a polygamist? 34 wife polygamist.
Well, he was a polygamist. I think that most Mormons know that, but it's considered something that's quaint today. Okay?
Whatever the prophet did was right.
Well, people used to burn witches in Salem. That wasn't horrible. That was quaint. Mormons are disconnected from their history unless it's something that their current leadership is expecting them to find faith promoting.
That's true. And a lot of them really don't want to admit that he was. They say it was spiritual,
yeah,
or they didn't have sex with him, or all these kinds
of
things.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're toward the end of the show here. Thanks so much.
We could have so much more fun if you had another hour.
I know. We had a lot to talk about, but we got to be closing now. But Romans 6:14 says, "For sin shall not be your master, because you are not under law, but under grace." You know, the devil hates the doctrine of grace. In fact, he has spawned hundreds of false religions that teach that we can do works to please God and to earn our own salvation, when he doesn't want us to know, or people to know, that God has already done everything for us. Those who want to be saved by keeping the laws and ordinances and rules needs to read James chapter 2, verse 10. And that's where God says that if we break even one law, we are guilty of breaking all of them and will be judged accordingly. Law versus grace is the difference between Mount Sinai, where Moses got the law, and Mount Calvary, where Jesus paid the price for our breaking that law. No one can ever pay for one single sin by obeying the law. That's why Jesus came, because law doesn't save us. Grace through faith saves us. It's the only way. God says, like our guest said, if it's by works, it's not by grace. If it's by grace, it's not by works, and you cannot combine the two. Everyone who tries to be saved by works of any kind doesn't have a chance. Now, we are not saved by our works, but we are judged by our works. And there's a big difference, and that's bad, because we all fall short. We have all done bad works. And judgment by works includes facing every single sin that we have ever committed and being judged for each sin. Now, if you're judged for every sin that you've ever committed, that's a lot of sins, and we are in big trouble, unless all of those sins have been washed away by the blood of Jesus Christ that He shed on the cross for those sins. That's why we need grace. Like I always say, throw out everything and everyone else. All we need is Jesus. In Him you can rest from your works, because He saves by grace. Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes, as well as download audio episodes of this program, at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org, or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.